Welcome to the Savvy Dentist Podcast with Dr. Jesse Green, the show where great dentistry meets great business. Listen in each week as we bring you an inspiring person who will share their story, ideas, and business techniques to help you create a practice and a life you love. And now introducing your host, Dr. Jesse Green.
Hello everyone, it's Jesse Green here. Welcome back to SavvyDentist.com and to the Savvy Dentist Podcast. Great to have you company for another episode of the show. Now, today we're talking about IT and security and keeping your systems up to date. And I'm joined by James Borg from Teamwork Technology, who is someone I've been working with for over 10 years. He's my go-to guy. I trust him enormously. And he's well known in the dental profession as the guy that helps a lot of dentists when they really need help. And I was certainly in that boat as well. I first met him after our practice was the victim of a crypto lock virus. And James had not been our IT guy up until that point, but he came in and solved that problem for us and helped us and has been my IT guy ever since. He and his firm have done tremendous things for us at the practice and here at Savvy Dentist as well. In this conversation, we're going to talk a lot about, you know, the key factors you need to have in place to keep your network secure. We know that attacks are on the rise. We've all seen the things that happened with Optus and Medibank. We know that it's not a case of if, but when someone tries to breach your network. And so how do you prevent that? How do you make yourself a harder target than the next place? How do you put in place enough multi-layered defenses so that you can resist that attack? We're also going to talk about something simple like password security, which sounds simple, but incredibly important. How do you look after your passwords? What do you do to make sure they don't get hacked? Because even though you might not be using software, if your main systems get hacked and you've got them on an Excel spreadsheet, well, then, you know, there can be some trouble there as well. So we're going to talk about password management. And we're going to talk about all the things that James wishes dentists knew about IT before they start their practice and as they run their practice that will save them so much heartache, so much hassle in the long run. There's a couple of key things here for you as well. So without any further ado, let's get into our conversation with James Borg, who I know is going to share some pearls of wisdom with you right now. Hey, James, welcome back to the Savvy Dentist Podcast, mate. Good to have you here. How's things up in Sydney town?
You know what? It's beautiful. We've just come out of Christmas. I'm feeling a bit fatter than I was before, but you know what? The family's happy and I'm just glad we're in this brand new year.
Mate, it is good to get into 2024. I hope the man in the red suit was kind to you. I hope you had a bit of a rest over the holiday period. I know you guys worked pretty hard, but hope you got a bit of downtime.
Do you know what? I wish I could say it was rest, but we had something like 30 people over at our house, and when you got to cook that much pork and lamb and beef, it just, you know, it's an effort in its own right, but it was a ton of fun.
good stuff, mate. Well, Christmas is all about that. It's always good fun. Mate, I've been working with Teamwork now, I want to say for nearly 10 years, if not 10 years, I can't remember exactly. And we've done a lot of work together and you've helped a lot of our clients, and the IT landscape from 10 years ago to today is, you know, radically different.
Yeah.
And what I really wanted to talk today about was kind of best practice from an IT perspective. How do practices keep themselves safe? How do they keep their network secure? You know, all the ins and outs around that. And you've also written some great articles for the Savvy Dentist magazine, you know, email phishing and the likes.
Oh, thanks, mate.
Yeah, no, they're really good, mate. They're awesome and they're really informative. They're really in-depth. And so for anyone listening here, just, you know, go and read James's articles there because they're also really tremendous. Mate, I want to talk to you a little bit about what you're seeing in the landscape at the moment. What's been happening from an IT perspective? I know off air we were talking about some of the things happening in the lead up to Christmas. What's been going on?
It's one of those funny things, right? Everybody in the lead up to Christmas is so busy that they kind of let their guard down. And you've got these things called public holidays, which always cause a bit of grief for us. And what it basically comes down to is these are hotbed times when people are actually, you know, trying to compromise more than they normally would. And the reasoning is if they hit you on a Friday of a public holiday, you're not going to know until, you know, a week, so they can inflict maximum damage and all of that nonsense.
Okay.
You know, and maximum exfiltration of data if required, which is horrible to your data getting out to the outside world.
So do you see a lot of these attacks at the moment still in the new year, or is that a pre-Christmas thing? Has it settled down a bit, or do you think this is going to be part of the normal landscape moving forward?
Look, it's any public holiday is one of the ones that, you know, scares the hell out of me. So, you know, Australia Day is usually one where it ramps up. Easter, it's wholly because they know that you're not going to be around.
Yeah.
A big part of this is that somebody can be in your network for 6 months before they actually launch an attack. And by that stage, they might not exfiltrate data by then, but it's all about knowing the steps they need to do to cause the most damage to your business so that they can get a maximum ransom from you.
I first met you years ago when we fell victim to a crypto locker virus. You might not remember this, but and we'd had a dodgy email come through that our receptionist at the time thought was pretty innocent, and it looked innocent, but there's an Australia Post spoof email, I think it was, from memory, and it locked everything up. And I remember at the time the whole ransom thing, you know, came about and all the rest of it, and thankfully we were able to kind of restore our data from some handy work that you guys were able to do. But I wanted to ask you about the impact of a hack or in a breach or whatever the correct language is there. Is it usually the fact that your data is locked up like ours was, or is it the fact that it's sold onto the dark web, you know, like the Optus, Medibank sort of stuff that we see?
It could be the sale.
Yeah.
We recently signed up a customer, and what had happened is we'd had them for about a week. We're in the process of bedding things down. This was just in the lead up to Christmas as well. They got compromised. Right, yep. Because they had insecure remote access. Like these days, two-factor is key, right?
Yeah.
We're seeing, you know, just tons and tons of attacks on unsecured remote access. These guys, they got in. We were able to detect that somebody had got in, right? And they were starting to run funny commands.
Yeah.
But the scariest part is that they'd actually, they found a spreadsheet with all the passwords in it.
Oh, no.
Next thing you know, the LinkedIn page has been hacked two weeks after the fact. Not just that, they're getting back in and trying to nut their way around. It's really scary. So why would they do anything with the LinkedIn page? It's all about just causing that damage. I don't know if they heard back from a ransom, but they had to reach out to LinkedIn, and this is a big, sizable business that that got hit. I honestly believe that they would have locked up the data had it not have been detected, and it would have been, hey, give us a couple of Bitcoin and we'll let you free.
Yeah, wowzers. Right? So there's a couple of things I'd like to ask about that, mate. Firstly, and simplistically, I'll come to the best practices around database management in a second, or database protection. But what about passwords? I mean, because, you know, things like an Excel spreadsheet you think is going to be a bit more secure than, a LastPass or something like that, because I think LastPass got hacked last year or the year before as well.
Yep.
So, you know, all these password managers and whatnot, how is the best way to secure and store your passwords?
Well, personally, you're going to have to start remembering them. Like, we're at the stage where password managers are being hit left, right, and center.
Yeah.
In our business, we take the protection of our clients' passwords very seriously. We have tens of thousands of passwords in there.
Yeah.
That we have to really protect. And the product that we use is actually designed for IT companies, and they take the protection of these very seriously. They're encrypted in the back end. There's no master encryption key. They have all the ISO certifications that they need to have.
Yeah.
But the problem is it's not an if, but a when somebody's going to get hit. My view is it's almost safer these days to have a good two-factor authentication on things and have not a common password, but a password that you know and you have several variations of that you use all around the place.
Yep.
As long as you've got the two-factor, that's probably closest to the safest thing you can do. You can also get things like dark web protection that watches out for your usernames and your accounts on the internet, and they'll actually notify you if they do see your password out there.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
As a matter of fact, a simple thing you can do, right, and this is an awesome exercise if you have an iPhone. You can actually go into, I think it's the keychain, and it'll run a security audit, and it'll tell you, hey, this account's password is out there on the internet.
Oh, jeez.
And it's actually a free thing you've got on your iPhone.
And if you're an Android, is there an Android user? Is there a similar thing, or just have to suck it up because you're an Android user?
Look, I'm
an Apple user, I shouldn't say that.
there probably is, but honestly, I don't touch iPhones. I build crazy networks for a living and solve IT problems all day. But give me an Android, I can barely make a phone call.
Sorry to all my friends who love Android. I couldn't resist the cheap shot. Anyway, there we go. What about, I heard someone talk about these dongles the other day where you plug your, you've kind of got physical two-factor authentication these days. What about those things?
Yeah, they actually are very incredible. I haven't got one because, you know, I can't justify the cost just yet. You know, the wife's under the bank account at the moment. We've got private school fees coming up next year.
Let me just say after-tax dollars too, mate.
Oh, the ones that hurt the most.
Anyway, sorry, I digress.
Yeah. So basically, yeah, the key with those things is that I really love the premise behind them, and I like the fact that you've got a password for the dongle as well, right? It's not like you plug it in and you're let in.
Yeah.
Overall, I think that they're great if you actually want to carry it around with you.
Yeah.
What we like to do with all of our clients these days, we've got a killer product. It's called Duo. It's owned by Cisco.
Yep.
Its premise is simple. It's like the Microsoft Authenticator, but you can tie it to pretty much anything you want. And it's cost effective. I think, you know, it's roughly $6 a user a month. But what it does is you go to log into your remote access or you know, any of the other stuff that you can tie to it, and your phone just goes dum, and you can click approve on your phone. It's got a fallback method as well. So if you get a new phone and you don't have the app and you haven't tied it back to Duo, it'll actually call you if you want it to, right? It's configurable in that way. And it'll go, welcome to Duo.
Yep.
If you know, are you trying to log on to X, press any key, and you can just push that and log in.
Oh wow, that's good.
It's brilliant. It's a changing product. We're starting to force it on all our clients that are requesting remote access. And I can tell you now, in the early this year, we'll start to make it mandatory for our managed clients that are using remote access.
I think that makes sense, mate. Because again, the inconvenience of doing that versus the inconvenience of a hack is significant. Now, I've had a hack before, and I can tell you it's manifestly inconvenient. I wouldn't wish it on my worst enemy. So we've spoken about password protection, but let's talk a little bit about best practice in terms of the hardware or the software or the whatever else. Yeah. So let's maybe look at it from a couple of different angles. What is the way to keep your network secure these days? Is it a case of having software, or is it a case of having different hardware solutions?
It's definitely a multi-layered approach these days. It has to be. So, you know, you have your spam protection, which is, you know, there's a couple of products that we use that we like. MailGuard is brilliant. There's another one that everybody's raving about called Anavan, which we just deployed for a client yesterday, and it looks very promising. In terms of the perimeter of the network, definitely firewall. If you're remoting in, yeah, have your two-factor linked into your firewall so that your VPN, it prompts you when you go to log on to the VPN.
Yeah.
And then once you're, you know, on the inside of the network, there's several things you can do. Some people, you know, we always say if you have a DVR, which is, you know, what you use for your security cameras, segregate those. They're one of the biggest risks you can have. So put them on a different network in the same network so it can't talk back to your network if they get compromised. One of my biggest things that I see out there is, you know, people won't hire a security specialist to install security cameras. The Sparky will do it. He'll pick up the DVR and the cameras from Turks.
Yeah.
And they plug it into the internet and walk away. But you've actually got a device there that's never getting security updated.
Wow.
And it's just a hotbed. We've seen those things take down practices.
Really?
Yeah, in the past. So that's something we always say these days should, to a degree, or definitely be segregated.
What about the alarm system itself compared to the cameras?
A lot of the time, the alarm systems, they use something called a permacon.
Yep.
They're not actually plugged into the internet.
Okay.
And you know, you get your app with you. We can unlock your front door or turn your alarm on and off. But it actually, that operates over 4G a lot of the time.
Got it. Okay.
So it's a completely separate thing. Yeah. So with the computers, it's just a matter of making sure that, you know, you have your antivirus, you have your there's an EDR, MDR, which is they're looking for persistent footholds where the bad guys are sitting, right?
Yeah.
It's like think about it like this. It's the caries, you know. What's in the caries?
What's in the caries? Right? Bad stuff.
Yeah, and these are the guys that actually they picked up that attack before Christmas, right? they picked up the phone at 4 o'clock in the morning and they said, because it always happens at four in the morning for some reason, right? They know you're asleep and they know that if an alert does pop up, no one's going to call. But, you know, we put the layers in so that we actually get phone calls.
Yeah, the call, yeah.
And we isolate the machines from the network. We know what's happening before they go too crazy, right? And that's the thing. The EDR, MDR, which MDR is managed detect respond, it's all about being a bit more proactive with it. And you can these days, I would rather, if I had to choose one, I would rather have an MDR, EDR than have antivirus, right? And that's a big call, right? Because keep in mind, you've got a good MDR, EDR will actually manage the built-in antivirus that's built into Windows Defender.
Mm-hmm.
And these days, that as a product, when it's managed, is, you know, very, very able to stop a lot of threats.
So I've got another question for you, mate, because we've gone through a process with your assistance in Savvy Dentist, yep, of, you know, consolidating our IT onto the Microsoft platform using 365.
The cloud, yep.
Yep, and we were in a position, as you know, where we had to kind of choose between Google Workspace versus Microsoft 365.
Yep.
Do you have any particular views about the security features of one over the other? Because I'm sure there's some practices that are probably using a bit of a hybrid approach to their, yeah, software documentation and, you know, all that sort, yeah, of stuff. Is it a thing or not a thing?
Look, at the end of the day, both platforms, I believe, have good security built, yep, in, right?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think one's more secure than the other.
Mm-hmm.
But my perception between the two is the Google suite of products, it's a good, easy-to-use, out-of-the-box product. My issue with it is that I feel that the email platform in it is not as capable as Microsoft Exchange, right? And you can see that because to a degree they still use POP and IMAP in there, right, which are ancient tech, right?
Mm.
I know that, look, let's talk the truth. People love using Outlook, right? That's a fact. And keep in mind, a lot of programs still interface with Outlook.
Yeah.
So you're using old tech to talk to a modern-day platform.
Mm.
That's not my bag. With the Microsoft 365 platform, I'm not going to say I'm a fanboy. I like it. I like it a lot. Think of it as a Lego set. You can get one piece. You know, each license is a piece.
Yes.
Right. You plug in the license for Exchange Online. Great. You've got a little tugboat, you know, in your bathtub. If you buy the right licenses and build it the way you want it, right, you can actually turn it into a battleship. And then we start to talk about, you know, the future where, you know, you're logging into your computer using the M365 username and password, and all of a sudden all your documents are there in SharePoint. We have quite a few real estate agencies that we look after as well outside of dental, and one of their biggest problems that they have is, you know, they have agents who will wipe the company phone and hand it back. So we come up with a Microsoft 365 policy that means that they can't wipe the data on the phone.
Yeah.
We can even lock the phone so they don't have access to the phone. We can lock the laptop. We can change the password. And when you're fully managing things, we can even locate a device on a map,
yeah,
right? Like Find My Friends.
Yeah, nice.
Because if it's a corporate-owned device, you need to be able to track where it is. And it actually, it works. This is the future. It's about how do we secure your data in the practice, down with 365. And I think SharePoint's going to have a very big play as things become more cloud. We're talking what Sirona's DS Core. That looks incredible.
Mm-hmm.
So if you're a Sirona user, you have the DS Core product. You have, you know, a cloud PMS that links with it. The future is you're not going to need a server.
No.
You're not going to need anything. Right. And this is dental, one of the hardest industries to do that in. You just have to buy all new stuff.
Well, that brings me to the next question about upgrading IT and you know, how and when do you know when to, you know, change from a legacy system to a new system? Is there a tipping point? Is there a trigger point? So for someone thinking about their IT, how do you know that, okay, now's the time to make the shift?
Basically, we are very fast approaching that point where you can operate a business to the degree of the old school on-prem solutions,
yep,
in the cloud.
Yeah, wow.
Okay. We're seeing, you know, the PMSs, right? You got core practice, you know, they've matured quite well. Principal You know, they're coming out with a, you know, with a brilliant product. You've got the D for web, right? That's come leaps and bounds as well. So you've got these products that have actually had the dev time and have matured into something that you can use. The problem is guess what? You start shopping again, right? You have to start shopping again and you have to figure out what you like. I like the dentists. We're creatures of habit. I like using the PMS we use because I know my way around it and I don't have to learn something new.
Yep.
Right? And ultimately, it's the same in the practice. The biggest drama that you'll always have is training the people around the slightly changed process of going from one PMS to another.
James, one of the things, you know, when it comes to PMSs, they're like, I think most of the ones on the market have, you know, their strong points and probably a couple of cons as well, right? And I don't think it's possible to get the perfect piece of software. So I think that, each one is going to have its things that you like and maybe one or two, you know, things that you don't. What are the factors that you think someone should consider as they choose that PMS? You know, from an IT perspective or even from you've dealt with so many dentists in an IT capacity, what are the things that people generally say are the things that they're looking for in a PMS?
Look, you know what? It's one of those things. It's all very personal choice on how it looks and how it feels. That's 90% of it, right? But it's also the people that come with the PMS.
Yeah.
Hell, there's two I didn't mention. You know, you got the Henry Schein One product Dentally, which is just replacing that Dentrix one that they've got, and Praktika. Have you ever spoken to a Praktika user?
A couple over the years, a couple.
All right. Do you ever notice that you've got two camps? You got those that say Praktika is rubbish, and you got a camp that says Praktika is the best. Right? It's a cult. If you're in Praktika and you love it, it's a part of a cult. And the one thing that I can say is that the people that I have love it. And trust me, this isn't a paid advertisement. I don't really have any association with them. But it comes down to they love the people that they're dealing with on the other end of the phone. It's the same as Chittum's product. They love those people. D4W people love the D4W reps that they work with.
Just moving on from PMSs for a second, mate, and when it comes to IT, what do you think, what do you wish, let me ask a better question, what do you wish dentists and practice owners knew that they don't?
The one thing I wish that they knew is, and this comes down to training, right, is you go to university for 5 years, and this is the same as IT in my business, right, Jesse? People go to university for five, six years to become a dentist these days.
Yep.
And they walk out as units. They know how to drill and fill and X and Y and Z and all of that. But nobody actually teaches you how to run a business when you're at university and dental school. Nobody teaches you the savvy things, right?
Boom, boom.
Yep.
Appreciate that, mate. Thank you.
Thank you. It's a friend of mine yesterday said to me, his family's got ties into the fruit markets and fruit industry, right? And he said, long after the sweetness of, you know, savings are gone, the bitterness of quality remains.
Yes, yes. Now, I've heard that saying, but I can't remember exactly. But, yeah, that's about it.
It's something along those lines.
Yeah.
One of the things I want to say is IT is really, it's becoming, it's a cornerstone of dentistry.
Mm.
And we see time and time again people that try to cut a corner. And I'm not just trying to make this an ad for me or, you know, justifying, you know, if we charge a little more or something. It's we walk into practices all day where they've tried to save 10% and they've ended up with 30% less of a solution.
Yeah.
And in one case, far out, the week before Christmas when I least needed it, like a hole in the head, we walked into a group of practices and they'd been saving money on IT. Now, these guys weren't concerned about saving money. Our monthly quote was higher than the previous provider that they had.
Yep.
They just had a couple of concerns.
Mm-hmm.
We walked in there, we did a little bit of an audit, we signed them up. And then the biggest drama that we had was that the security that they had in place every corner had been cut.
Oh, no.
And it had been cut by their IT guy because he thought they wanted a cheap solution.
Yeah.
They had 20,000 attempts to log into their network.
Oh, no.
And they had unsecure remote access there.
Oh, no.
20,000 attempts in what time period do you think?
Well, because it's probably automatically generated, I'm going to guess a very short time period, but I can't say for sure.
An hour and a half. That's how far the logs went back.
Oh, right? My God. 20,000 in an hour. Okay, I thought it'd be short. I didn't think it'd be that short.
No. So we worked it out. It'd be something like 240,000 attempts in a day. It was only a matter of time before they got compromised.
Yeah.
And this is the thing is, had they have spent 10% more, which they have now with us, they wouldn't have had to worry about that. They wouldn't have had to worry about the corners that were cut and, you know, things that were taking their business down, and they're operating smoothly now.
I think it's really interesting, James. You mentioned a moment ago that IT is becoming the cornerstone of dental practice, and it already is, as you rightly point out. I remember when I graduated, you know, way back when, we're still on paper records and, you know, films, that were wet developed and all the rest of it. And so, you know, perhaps there's a generation, you know, of dentists at my age and older that probably are a little bit slow on the uptake. I think, you know, even my generation now probably, you know, really aware of it and hopefully a bit more attuned to getting this right. But I think the younger generation, a bit more tech savvy, a bit more kind of native with it. Do you notice any generational divide when it comes to, you know, digital literacy around this, or is it just, you know, something that people have generally woken up to and thought, I've just got to get this right?
It's one of those things where a lot, you know, I find that the older generation of dentists, they actually seem a bit more scared than the younger generation.
Yep.
And the younger ones, I think it's just that we grew up around, you know.
I like how you said we, by the way. I'm just going to point that out.
Oh, trust me, I'm not young. I'm talking to dentists that are opening practices in their 20s, like 27 years old, and I'm like, I remember when I was 27.
I'm sorry, mate. I couldn't help myself.
All right. Psychologically, I'm 19.
Remember yeah, me too, mate. Don't worry, I'm 15. It's all good. I'm sorry, dude.
I think it's the younger generation that psychologically grown up around this atom bomb. So the fear just isn't there as much as it used to be. They know what they need to do to protect themselves.
Yeah.
It's really still scary for, you know, the us that are, you know, 35 plus.
How do you plan out what kind of infrastructure you're going to need to make it a little bit future-proof, to kind of make sure you've got the right layers of redundancy built in, to make sure you're kind of not buying a Betamax video player when the whole world goes to VHS? How do you make sure you're buying the right stuff for future-proofing?
So one thing we look at, you know, is, yeah, you buy one brand of firewall and they're good today and not tomorrow.
Yeah.
And they're not a cheap investment. They're like $3,000 for a good entry level. You know, we love Cisco Meraki because they're just really easy. They've got a host full of features. They do some amazing things. And, you know, gone are the days where we used to be able to charge 5-6 hours worth of labor to install a firewall because we can get these things down to an hour or two, right?
Yeah.
But their manageability and day-to-day operations, great. The thing that I love about their product is that I can buy a license for a firewall that's 8-9 years old. I can buy a license for that firewall for 10 years, all right?
Yep.
And if I buy it new from Cisco and I put a 10-year license on it, guess what? For 10 years, it's covered under a warranty.
Yeah, nice.
It doesn't matter if you have too much of an older device with them because they keep adding the new cool features to it so that it just keeps going and going and going. Whereas back in the old days, we used to buy a brand called SonicWall, and SonicWall is still a reputable brand. But, you know, after four or five years, they go, oh, that device is dead. It's not getting any of the new cool features. You can't buy a new license for it. The Meraki seem to be just lasting, you know, keeping their devices out there longer because it's all about their cloud, not their device.
Yeah, nice.
Per se.
So, James, just in terms of wrapping things up, mate, and making sure we're giving people some takeaways, what would be the top three things that you think dental practice owners should have in their tool bag or in their knowledge bank or things to do to be aware of to make sure that their data is secure, their systems are modern and flexible and future-proof?
EDR, absolutely. EDR, MDR, you know, it's a security camera on all your computers monitored by a security knock 24/7. That's step one. Step two, two-factor everything within an inch of its life. It's annoying as hell.
Yeah.
And then obviously step three, which is, you know, firewall these days. You really need one.
Mate, there's lots of practical tips there. Thank you so much for that. And again, thank you for sharing so generously, mate, because I think as far as I'm aware, the biggest player in the IT space in dentistry, you're the most reputable. I'm really pleased to have been able to work with you for such a long period of time. You've came and helped us when we were in a pickle, and that was when we first met you. You know, it was you helped us fix the problem. That's how we got to meet. It was me going, James, I've got a problem, and you were kind enough to come and bail us out, mate, which was great. And of course, we've used your services for the practice and for Savvy Dentist, mate. So from my heart, I really appreciate all you do for us. But for all the practices out there that use your services, mate, thanks for keeping everyone up and running. I know that, you know, when your IT stuff goes down, that's a crisis in a practice because the you know what hits the fan because you can't operate. And I know you guys are super duper responsive and trying to give people, you know, the opportunity to get back up and running as quickly as possible, mate. So I know there'll be a lot of people listening to this podcast who would join me in saying thank you for all you do for the profession, mate. It doesn't go unnoticed and it's very much appreciated. So thank you, mate.
Thank you, Jesse. I just love working with you, mate. You're a good bloke.
You're a good man, mate. Well, let's keep doing that. That's fun.
Done.
All right, mate. Well, happy new year, and let's make 2024 a ripper for everyone. And can't wait to catch up soon, my friend.
Likewise, mate. You have a lovely day, and let's get started in this new year.
Thank you for listening to the Savvy Dentist podcast. For more episodes, go to drjessegreen.com/savvydentist. And to discover how to build a high-performance dental practice, visit drjessegreen.com and download the free report.